And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Tuesday, February 18, 2025. I was just saying, if I thought I was going to live this long, I'd taking better care of myself. My goodness, it's 2025 already. I want to welcome everyone to today's program. Thanks for signing up to Rumble. Thank you so much for following us on Rumble and being part of the chat tonight. God bless each and every one of you in there. You're the core of the show, as well as the listeners who downloaded our show. Thank you so very much. If you're on your way to work listening to this a day after, thanks for, drive safely. And if you're working, be careful and be productive. Just want to welcome you in to a nice program. With me tonight is Josh Mez. We're going to have a discussion. We're just going to have a discussion about certain things. But before I bring him on, before I get to everything, I just want to make sure people, folks, your health is important. How you feel is important. And I want just to drive that point home because, sometimes things just, I don't know, you feel old, right? Sometimes. Well, I want you to go to chuckdefense.com, chuckdefense.com/Hagmann, chuckdefense.com/Hagmann, okay? Make sure that /Hagmann is in there. Two N's on Hagmann, by the way. And if you've ever wondered what happened to Chuck Norris, he's 84 years old. He's kicking behinds everywhere he goes. He's looking good. He's feeling good. So is his wife, who is... it's just incredible. Watch the video at that link. He's stronger. He can work out longer. He has plenty of energy during the day for his grandchildren. He can outpace most people, half his age. I'm sure about it. But he did this by making just one change. He still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this one thing, and she too never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger. Her body looks leaner, and she's got energy all day. All day. That's right. All day. Don't have to nappy in the daytime. Remember Biden? You can almost hear him snoring during the G7. Never mind. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains everything. Make sure you watch it by going to chuckdefense.com/Hagmann or by clicking the link below this video. It's going to change the way you think about your health. Once again, that's chuckdefense.com/Hagmann and click on the link in the description box below to watch the video now. You're not going to believe how simple it is. 84, still going strong. We've got to love it. All right. Josh Mez is with me, and Josh, come on board and sit next to me, will you? Cozy on up, and we can spoon if you want. No, we can't. I don't do that. President Trump held a news conference. He went scorched earth today. He fired all of Biden-era U.S. attorneys. Thank God. I mean, thank heaven. Thank the Heavenly Father he did that. Obama judge reinstates Biden-appointed chairwoman of Merit Systems, the protection board at the Merit System, or the Merit Systems Protection Board. Says Trump doesn't have authority to fire her. So these judges are, this is classic lawfare. The judges, Josh, are just making their own laws as they go along. They're legislating from the bench. They can't do this. Imagine yourself, you are and have been, and you're an owner of businesses, and imagine you buy a business or you assume a business, and you've got employees that you don't want working for you, so you fire them, and some judge comes in and says, you can't fire these people. What the hell? I mean, seriously. So this is a color revolution, by the way, that we're undergoing by judicial activism. Your thoughts on this, huh?
Yeah, thanks for having me on again tonight. Enjoy being here. I see this as nothing more than an attempt to delay the inevitable for them. They know the end is near, and they're going to, use any activist judge they can to try to slow down the progress that this administration is making. And it's really unprecedented how fast they're moving. So they're getting more and more desperate. You can see just by some of the rulings that these judges are making just unilaterally without any type of case study to fall back on whatsoever. They are just making it up as they go along, trying to prevent him from making good on his pact with the American people. So, you know, once it gets into the appellate courts and it goes through the process, I'm sure that he'll get right back on track. And I'm sure that they had planned for this and they know exactly what's happening.
Oh, okay, but here's my problem I have with this. We do have a clip that we can play in a little bit of Julie Kelly kind of explaining both one ruling and kind of the landscape, which I really, the reason I selected it, it's a long, long clip, so we can't play the whole thing, but we can play, you know, parts of it. But this is war. I mean, this is absolute war by the left, by the globalists, by the people in there that don't want the positive changes made. And, you know, there's a fear, level of fear involved as well as, and I should throw this out there. I don't know whether you had a chance to hear this. I know you've been busy all day. Kash Patel passed a key Senate confirmation vote today. He's going to go to the full Senate, I believe. Well, sometime this week, Howard Lutnick was also confirmed as Secretary of Commerce. Interesting and very positive. But anyway, Kash Patel made it out of committee, I believe, today. Not I believe, that did happen.
Yeah, so. 51-45, I believe it was. Lutnick. I'm sorry, that was Lutnick.
Yeah, Lutnick, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Kash will later on be voted on later on. But all of this is just, in my view, is to slow. Well, you're right. You said it, to slow the inevitable, I guess. Right? I mean, but then, and here's the question everyone's been asking. Do you believe, based on your research, and folks, in case you don't know, Josh Mazzi, he's a great researcher, great investigator. I've known him pretty much all his life, but he's very good at what he does in terms of like getting information from behind the scenes and getting information before. I mean, there are many times he'll call me up and say, "Hey, did you see this?" And like, that wasn't even on my radar. No, I didn't see it. And then, sure enough, 3-4 hours later, you know, it hits the news. So and he's part of Hagman Investigative Services and, of course, the Hagman Report. So just to let you know who he is. I want to know if you think there's going to be any perp walks at all.
Yeah, I know we're all hoping and praying for it. I think they said the cash is formal vote, the floor vote will be on Thursday as of right now is what I read. I think once we get firing on all cylinders with all of his nominees in there, and they start actually making progress with their agenda, that we will potentially see starting off with probably a few lower ranking officials, and then, you know, sky's the limit from there. But it's all, like you were saying earlier, it's all political warfare. It's complete warfare at this point. They will do anything necessary to save their little corrupt empire that they have built. Donald Trump and his administration with Elon, they're knocking it down systematically. They're working like a well-oiled machine at this point. I saw today that, you know, Elon wants to go in and actually audit the Fort Knox. So that would be a really interesting thing to see. He wanted to see, he even suggested live streaming it. So that'd be something to see.
You know, the last time that was audited, it was what, it began in 69 and in 74 or something like that. It's been 50 plus years. Yeah. It's okay. Oh, that would be that. You know what? They could put that on pay-per-view and, pay down, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay. Now going back to Kash Patel, This was, Adam, I want to play this. It's a minute long, but it's well worth it, you know. And then we can move on to the Lawfare part of things, because I think this is important for people. I think people need to understand. It's just me. Because, man, I got a hard time understanding. Wait a second. These people are being put back in office and then, you know, they're fired. But no, you can't fire them. And why can't I fire them? And why are the judges involved? Again, Julie Kelly does a great job. Before we go there, I want to show you this, because you probably haven't seen this. And folks, you may not have seen this either. Here's Adam Schiff, that pencil neck puke. Crying, basically. I'm not going to say he's tearing up, but he's afraid of Kash Patel. And this is cut one in the show notes. Go to HagmanPI.com, click on today's episode, and you'll see the show notes. That's HagmanPI.com, but here's cut one.
It seems my colleagues are determined to confirm him on the Senate floor. To all those FBI agents I worked with over the years, to all that are there now that I've not had the privilege of working with, my heart breaks for what you're about to go through with leadership that you cannot respect, who has not earned your respect, who will not earn your respect. I know you will put your head down and do your jobs because you're professionals. I hope you stay at the FBI. I hope you don't leave, because if you're committed to the mission and you leave, then it's going to just leave behind people who are less committed to the mission. So I hope you'll stay. I hope you'll gut it out. I hope the same is true of the career professionals at the Department of Justice who are the subjects of a similar witch hunt. I spent almost 6 years in that department. I venerate that department. And we need the career civil servants, public servants who serve in both those institutions. But it will be a sad day indeed when we confirm the likes of Kash Patel, knowing what we are getting. We will have no one but ourselves to blame. Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam Schiff, Cry Me a River, Ed Buck. Thoughts? I mean, I don't know. Woody, it is what it is, I guess, right, with this guy?
I get mad even looking at him. I can't. Yeah. It's hard to just digest the amount, just the fabrication, the complete and utter fallacies that he speaks of. It's really mind blowing how good they are at lying and trying to make you actually believe the lie. And that's something that I wish more people would be aware of. Is they get these sound bites and snippets and things like that, and they have no idea what's actually happening. And if they actually looked into some of the things that these politicians are doing, they'd be a lot less interested in hearing what they have to say and more on the side of, let's get these guys in there and get to work here. Nonetheless, he should be upset. He should be scared. And and you're going to get exactly what you're going to get exactly what we voted for. So, he's speaking in that somber tone that he sounds sad. He should be scared and he should be sad, because their reign of terror is over.
And that's what it was. Anybody who's been involved in lawsuits, man, you know, it does not matter. Guilt or innocence in Lawfare really does not matter in a larger sense. The process is a punishment. You know, you bleed money, you hemorrhage money. That's by design. When you get hit with a lawsuit, for example, like President Trump, you have to dedicate resources to the lawsuit or plural suits. In this case, this is challenging the authority of the executive branch, which, you know, it's so crazy. And with Kash Patel and Adam Schiff, you look at Schiff, you look at all of what he's done. Trevor Lawton did a great piece on him, expose on him in one of his books. The guy needs a full colonoscopy by the FBI, by the good FBI agents. And but all of this, man, it's just crazy. What are you hearing? Now, to kind of change the subject a little bit, I guess Zelensky from Ukraine was a little bit peeved that he wasn't part of the Russia or the trip to Saudi Arabia, he canceled his trip to Saudi Arabia because he was pissed off that he was not a participant in U.S.-Russia discussions that took place in Riyadh. I guess it was, yeah, it was today. Do you have any thoughts? And I'm going to put it that way because I don't know if anyone really knows what's going to happen, but do you have any thoughts about where you see this Russia-Ukraine war going after 2 million really of deaths, a million on both sides, at least in the soldiers and the civilians. I mean, any thoughts on Russia, Ukraine?
Yeah, a few things on that. One, with Zelensky not being part of the conversations initially here, you know, he had years before the Trump administration was in place to have his own discussions. You know, they had some minor discussions over the past few years, but nothing really came to fruition on those. And, you know, he kind of was playing puppet for the Biden administration, and now he's upset that he doesn't have a say when, U.S. takes a strong stance against war and against the killing, senseless killing of all these people in Ukraine and Russia, President Trump is going to end this war one way or another. The bloodshed needs to stop. So whether he's a part of that conversation or not, I don't think that really even matters. Will they lose some, it's hard because we don't want Ukraine to lose territory and we don't want Russia to be able to claim victory. However, the war does need to end, and it needs to get, it needs to end quickly, because we're seeing EU after J.D. Vance's visit there this past week. Now we're seeing the EU trying to coordinate without the United States, without NATO, without the United States, and potentially sending 30,000 troops from the EU to Ukraine, which would just obviously escalate this war to a whole different level if that were to happen. And they're having serious discussions about that just because the EU is that upset with what J.D. Vance came in and said over this past week, with them basically targeting their own citizens and censoring their own citizens. They're very upset about that. And now they're saying, hey, you know what, maybe we just do this without the United States. Well, I think that we're trying to get this thing ended as quickly as possible so they don't have an opportunity to prolong this war even longer.
You know, yet this piano playing comedian, obviously not a serious person. Anyone who uses his dangling participle to strike tickle the ivories on a piano is, not quite all there. But he was saying, look, Ukraine's never going to accept any kind of deal struck by the U.S. and Russia if I'm not involved in the talks. And, I just see a lot of globalist maneuvering by the globalists to keep this war going and to drive a wedge between the U.S. and Russia specifically. And this guy seems, by the way, it's notable, I think, to point out that Zelensky was recently in Poland, in Germany, all throughout the EU, and then went to UAE and Turkey, all since the weekend. And for a nation that's at war, he seems to have a lot of free time on his hands, I'm just saying. And for those who don't know it, real quick, the U.S. delegation in Riyadh was to organize the channels for communication and the diplomatic process really that being the first stage to construct where dialogue can begin. And that's kind of what was going on. And Zelensky's participation in the organization of how the USA and Russia talk to each other is really not relevant anyway, but it would have been nice if he would have had the time. So, okay. I just wanted to kind of lay that groundwork. But yeah, I think you're right. The news out of Ukraine and Russia is not all that great. I mean, you had drones from Ukraine attacking a pumping station responsible for transporting oil through the Caspian Pipeline Consortium, which is not, it's not just exclusively Russian. And it's partly a Western asset belonging to American Energy Corporation. So there's that. There's other control elements involved in behind the scenes with Ukraine military operations. And they, these groups, these cabals are providing U.S.-provided military weapons to target energy infrastructure that's close to and part of Russia as well as Western interests. You have to wonder who they are and what they're getting out of it. So anyway, there's just a lot of stuff going on there, and I think President Trump's got his hands full with that. But but you're right in a lot of areas there with the, that you said with respect to the war itself.
I think Trump is going to go ahead and try to use the tools that he has been using since he got back in office and with Russia. And I think Trump believes that the quickest way for him to end this war is to relieve some of the sanctions on Russia, as well as opening up a window for the possibility of trade again. Whether that be with energy or minerals or anything of that nature. So I think that is the route, the strategy that Trump is trying to take with Russia right now. And it doesn't necessarily require Zelensky's input on that end. It's just a matter of what the territorial integrity of Ukraine will look like when this ceasefire eventually happens, hopefully here in the next couple of weeks. You know, there's some people that I've seen that are saying, hey, you know, Russia won that territory. It's kind of, you know, to the victor goes the spoils type thing and just end it there. And there's other people that say no matter what, Ukraine's territorial integrity cannot be violated and they need to get every inch of land back that they've already had. And that's still the one good sticking point that I see. Causing a conflict, or I guess we're going to see where Putin stands on that, where he has said, you know, this was all because of the West's aggression here. It wasn't us looking to take over another country. So, and, you know, we have the those people that are saying, hey, if we do negotiate a peace with Putin and we do take him at his word that he is just going to use whatever he gets and weaponize that against the EU or the West as a whole. So that is where we're going to have a little bit of hesitation there, I think. But either way, you know, we're going to try to get through this as diplomatically as possible, I believe. So try to get this thing ended here quickly.
Interesting point and points and analysis. And you know, I go back to and think about how the U.S. in another, well, throughout modern history, promising not to expand NATO eastward, you know, ever since the fall of the wall, and every step of the way, we violated the treaties and agreements and memos of understanding. And you know, now they're, of course, they want NATO to be, or Ukraine to be part of NATO. And then Viktor Orban, I don't know whether you saw this tweet today. This kind of morphs into the situation with USAID, where he sent out, it's a post, I guess, on X, not a tweet, but okay. Our fears have come true, he wrote. The globalist liberal Soros NGO network is fleeing to Brussels after President Trump dealt a huge blow to their activities in the U.S. Now 63 of them are asking Brussels for money under the guise of various human rights projects. Not going to happen. We're not going to let them find safe haven in Europe. The USAID files expose the dark practices of the globalist network. We're not going to take the bait again. And Europe is in shambles. You've talked to me about that, so I think Europe is they're on their heels about everything, including Ukraine, and the U.S. is with DOGE pushing forward and exposing corruption that includes USAID as well as the money laundromat of Ukraine. So yeah, wow. Okay. Wow, just wow. And it's amazing how many people still have Ukraine in their bio, you know, and walking around with lapel pins and thinking they're okay. I mean, they're, you know, on the side of, I don't know what the hell they think.
Yeah, but. I mean, on one hand, you can somewhat understand where they're coming from. You know, your hearts do go out to them and you want, you know, you want nothing but the best for them. But at the same time, I don't think a lot of people realize that they're just political pawns in this war. And it really isn't about Ukraine versus Russia. It is, a globalist, communist regime trying to, fight against corruption, or have the United States fight against corruption. But the thing with that is Ukraine is just as corrupt as Russia. So, you know, there's really no, it's a lose-lose for us. The only benefit that we're getting out of it is the military industrial complex is benefiting from it, and which was, you know, pretty much supporting the Biden administration for the entirety of his reign of terror. So, yeah. You know, looking to demilitarize a little bit here and try to refocus on trade and hopefully, these other countries in Europe start to buy into it. And I think we are seeing a bit of a rise of populism in Europe. You know, I've seen a couple of things with a new voice from Greece coming out recently, speaking at some of these EU events. We have Viktor Orban. We have it seems to be a rise quickly of people in Europe are getting pretty sick of the censorship and the lack of free speech and everything else that they're experiencing right now as well. So really, I hope that, you know, this objective of peace through strength and offering, you know, trying to get the entire world involved in a global trade with the United States. I think it's a noble plan, but we'll, you know, to be determined if how that will play out.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned Europe and some of the populist movements over there, but part and parcel to that, I think, is the free speech platform that the U.S. has, or at least ostensibly has. And we see, and you've seen over in UK, even in Canada, where you've got the police arresting people for posting insults, not criminal, not threats, but, you know, things that they don't like. One person, I think it was in the UK, posted a flag or something on social media, and they're arresting people for this. And then we look at the UK and we look at London and we see nothing but this Muslim Islamic takeover of London, Paris, the same thing. I mean, is it too little too late right now? I mean, is Europe gone, or do you think that we can revive? And that's when I say we, I'm talking about them. Can they get back to normal, so to speak, or to where they don't have crazies, you know, flying the Islamic flag over Big Ben and having calling for prayer in the midday? I mean,
you know, it's going to be it's all about the elections and the rise of some of these populist leaders. And, you know, we've seen how the integrity of our elections go. So obviously, I would think that the EU countries in the EU are not any better. And I think they have a much stronger hold over their population than they had over the United States. You know, thankfully, we're protected by our Constitution. And at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of reviving itself. But, you know, I think it's going to be a lot more of a struggle for a lot of these countries in the EU to come to terms with the reality that they're facing and kind of trying to wake them up, because they're so censored and it's so far to the globalist side that it's really hard to get a message through for them. So I think that is what J.D. Vance's speech there was intended to kind of provoke some of that conversation. And I think that's why the EU is so upset with that. He's basically saying, right,
how did
to
you
their
like
face.
That? I mean, that was a phenomenal speech. I thought, go ahead and, I mean, give me your thoughts on that, because that was like scorched earth to the max.
Yeah, I mean, he basically called out the censorship right to their face and said, you know, basically saying, if Europe decides to keep doing this, United States and Europe are not going to be on the same page. And if they want to play ball with the United States, then they have to kind of take a look at themselves and how they're treating their citizens. And, you know, you've seen multiple examples of it. I think there was just a 60 Minutes interview this week where they were 60 Minutes was following around German police going around and arresting people for putting up memes that were so-called harmful. So that's the type of censorship that you have going on in Europe, that they're arresting people over memes. And theirs is a lot, you know, we've had people here get arrested for similar things, but I think theirs is much deeper, going on at a much deeper level right now. So, you know,
yeah, that's true. I mean, Douglas Mackey, I think I might have the last name wrong, arrested for a meme against Hillary Clinton back in 2016. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I think with us now kind of taking charge and leading the way again, with the United States kind of being the champion of free speech again instead of the biggest proponent for censorship, you know, we've had a radical change. We basically, the country pulled a 180, which it was, you know, it was that way the entire time. It just it took us a long time to fight through that industrial censorship complex there. And
boy, did it ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, that seems to be coming to an end, or at least it has been halted or slowed down significantly. To the point where, you know, we can make our point across to the rest of the world, to anybody that has access to the platforms that are shared within the United States. So, you know, X playing a big part of that, Rumble playing a huge part in that. I think as more exposure gets out there, we're going to see a big shift in the cultures in Europe, and we're going to probably see the same thing happened over there that's happened here, but I think it's going to take a little bit of time for us to get to that point.
You know, I don't want to blindside you, because that's not my intent, but there was an internet researcher that had done this expose on a certain social media influencer, podcaster, and affiliates like the wellness company and Rumble, is specifically mentioning Rumble as being part of like an organized I don't want to put words in that this person's mouth, nor can I really nor do I have the desire to really explain the entire, you know, supposed expose, but kind of guilt by association. But thank God for places like Rumble and places like Rumble, because without that, you know, the only thing you really post are, on YouTube would be anything they approve, and puppy dogs and or Spotify, yeah, you know.
Thank God they came along when they did, and they had the response that they did. Because if Rumble hadn't been around, even with Rumble being the free speech platform that it is, it's actually forced YouTube and Google to kind of open up their censorship platforms a little bit, and you're starting to see some shows. You know, you're seeing Sean Ryan on YouTube, you're seeing Benny Johnson on YouTube, you're seeing some of these shows on YouTube. Whether those are curated, like selected entities to to perform well. I think YouTube and Google are obviously aware that there's an audience for that. So I wouldn't put it past them to selectively elevate some of those shows. One or two of them become popular, but they're not going to allow the main platform where there's all these voices out there. People like yourself or Alex Jones or, those people are still not welcome on that platform. So, of course, thank God for Rumble, because they're allowing everybody to have a voice again. So
should we, because you're younger than I am and you understand this stuff more than I do, should we be suspect of people still on YouTube or not? Who say, well, look, we're all for free speech and this and that, but they're still on YouTube. Should we look at them and say, I don't know if you're there, because YouTube controls the content. It's obvious. I mean, they
control the content, but at the same time, they still are the largest streaming service in the world. So for a startup show, just to get their, get some exposure, it's still a useful tool. I'm all for using their platforms against them as well. Let us, if we can pull views from other left-wing sources and have some type of platform on these various social networking sites. I think we have to at least remain engaged with them to a certain extent, but I do understand the urge to want to boycott them, but at what cost? Because you're basically, if you boycott them, at the same time you're silencing your own voice. So
that's true.
It's a double-edged sword, really. Yeah. I know we've had that discussion before.
Yeah, we have.
And as much as I I disagree with YouTube censorship policies, at the end of the day, they are their own company, so they can decide what goes on and what does not. I do think there needs to be
Then they should not hide behind the
230. There needs to be some type of transparency there, and they shouldn't hide behind some legal mechanisms, some vague legal mechanisms to say, we're going to take this off of our platform because we're hiding behind this. Absolutely. So it's complicated, but at the end of the day, I think the more people that can hear voices like yours or, the conservative movement, I think that's for the better. And I think that a lot of these streamers are also, they have multiple platforms that they're streaming on. So you're starting to see some of these shows stream on X, stream on Rumble, stream on YouTube. Right. They're streaming on multiple platforms. They're using a multicast system. So I think, it's making it available for people to use their preferred platform, and hopefully they're going to have, Rumble's obviously going to grow organically, and they're going to, their services are going to catch up to some of the technology advances that that YouTube has had. YouTube has obviously had the biggest head start, so they're far, they're still far superior in terms of technology. But Rumble is catching up extremely fast. And now we're seeing X, with their launch of their new Grok AI platform just yesterday. I was kind of testing out. It's very, very transparent. It's the best AI tool I've seen to date, and it doesn't hide anything, and it's open sourced, and it's
AI
going to be the
engine tool for
safest.
this crap.
Yeah, it's going to
Okay,
be the
so
safest platform you have. The X, X Premium with Grok. If you use AI, Grok is going to be the best bet for an unbiased viewpoint on current events or whatever you want to use it for. I don't know how it tests out with programming or Excel sheets or anything like that, but from what I've seen, it's very, very capable. It's been very good so far. So,
well, okay, so for fossils like me who are listening and watching, and maybe you don't want to admit you're a fossil. Okay, I get it, but I am. What the hell? Okay, what? I'm not even sure I understand even the basics. Grok, it's an AI part of X. Is that what that is? I mean,
Yeah,
because
well,
I
it's
mean, what the hell is it?
technically, I think the parent company is technically XAI. It's a, it is a tool that is integrated into the X platform. And you can use it to summarize news. You can use it to analyze data, and it's very, very objective. And it's, use things like OpenAI or ChatGPT. You don't know if it's recording your keystrokes. You don't know what information it has saving with Grok. At least you can see if you're into computer programming. At least you can see that it is fairly non-intrusive to your privacy, much more so than any of the other ones available out there. So.
Wow. All right. Because, well, rather than perhaps bore people as to that know what AI does behind the scenes, I guess, we don't have to go there. But I was just amazed at the how AI has seemed to take over everything. I was amazed because I did try it out. I have to admit that I did use it as an editing tool, okay, but that's where I stopped. I would not let that program change any words, just more or less spell check and grammar check. That's all. But I mean, where are we going with this AI stuff? Because I was talking to Steve Quayle, who you know, I mean, he feels that this is alien intelligence, not necessarily artificial intelligence. And by alien, we're talking fallen angel kind of stuff. So, I mean, is it, where are we going to end up with this? I mean, what kind of world are you going to see for your kids? I'm just asking with AI involved.
Yeah, as it with how quickly it's moving, and with every update that you see coming along, I completely understand where that sentiment would come from with that theory. It's because it is revolutionary. And once we get into quantum computing and things like that, you're just going to see an explosion of technology advancements. And it can seem biblical. It can seem, how did we get to the point where we were able to create this technology? How did we get to the point where we could create these microchips that are, small as an atom? It's really mind-blowing to see how fast and quickly the AI field is growing. And I don't know how, at this point, it's a runaway train. So we can only hope to contain it and
Wow.
And try to get, you know, try to stay ahead of it, but it's not going to slow down. So I think, again, I think I've said this every show, I think it's urgent that Congress acts to pass a digital bill of rights for people. So it ensures that their, you know, their personal information remains encrypted. Their banking information remains encrypted. Their social media remains encrypted. It should be every site you have or every product you use should be able to opt in or opt out, they shouldn't be able to deny you use of that product if you choose to opt out of some of the privacy settings. There's a whole bunch of different things that we could really dive into in that regard, but that's a conversation for hours and hours.
Yeah, I think I'm going to ask you at some point to put together your presentation, because you understand this so much more. You know, I'm still having a problem with air travel. Okay, let me ask you about this, because this is kind of along the same lines. It's my understanding now where if you fly, and maybe you know more about this than I do, and if not, that's all right, but it's my understanding you get your picture taken. You can opt out of that, but it's for facial recognition purposes at some airports. Do you know about that? I mean,
yeah, when I was in Europe over the summer, flying from Italy back to the United States, those are fully integrated into their system, and it is terrifying that they can do that. It's very, very intrusive of your privacy. You can't opt out of it, but then they kind of look at you sideways, especially in Europe, like, what do you have to hide? Freedom of expression and it's not taken as seriously in Europe. It's just not. They don't look at it. They look at it as, why would you behave that way socially in the first place? You shouldn't have to do that. Whereas us, I guess we're rebels by default, and thank God, because where would the world be without us? But, there is no expectation of privacy.
But is that part of the AI technology that they're using in that respect?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. You got AI, fundamentally, the predictive power, privacy intrusion, surveillance, social shaping, control, monetary control. There are a ton of things that have to be discussed with that, and it have to be taken seriously, and it has to be done quickly, because it is moving extremely, extremely fast. And it needs to be done quickly. I can't stress that enough.
They
have to have like transparent data rules. They have to have decentralized control. They have to have privacy by design built into the AI. There's so many things that you have to really get into when you're talking about AI and how to basically stop it from being an intrusive and intrusive part of your life, because no one wants a big brother. We don't want government looking over our shoulder. We don't want corporations looking over our shoulders. I think it's critical that Trump, especially, if the left gets control again, and these are not in place, these laws are not in place, it's game over, because they're going to be able to win it so quickly just through technology and your data.
Well, even if they do, to me, even if rules are in place, look what the Biden regime did with FISA. It's like, screw this. We don't have to follow the rules. I just, again, the technology is outpacing our ability to really comprehend where it can go. Like you said, we need at least some sort of a speed bump,
needs to be, there has to be citizen oversight. There has to be congressional oversight. Everything needs to be open source. They have to have a built-in kill switch. And there should be global standards for AI as well. Very similar to how aviation is. You know, there's a core set of aviation rules that are abided by around the world through IATA. So I think something like that, some type of oversight committee needs to be established for something like that. Now, I know there's a lot of things already in the works. There's been bills that have been introduced. I just haven't seen any movement or any coverage of those lately. I think it's kind of on the back burner right now, where everything is with Trump is trying to, they're trying to advance everything here. So
what's your prediction about how things, I mean, if you just woke up after a long sleep, I guess, and you're looking at things with fresh eyes, and you know, last you knew, maybe Biden won the last election, you know, and just woke up now and kind of assessing the landscape. Do you have any? And this is a big question, and maybe a sloppy question, but I got to ask anyway. Between the border, between AI, between the nominations, the judges, them trying to enact a color revolution here in the U.S. Norm Eisen, by the way, is the one behind. I mean, what do you see happening? You've got Trump, you've got Musk, you've got Doge, you know, as a whole. I mean, there's so much. Okay, Ukraine, Russia, that we talked about. Anything jump out at you in terms of, hey, I think this might be a possibility given what I've seen just in my, you know, recently awakened slumber? Anything, go anywhere, you know, go anywhere you want. I mean,
with Doge, I think that hopefully they can keep going without too much more interference here. I think that Elon may even try to talk Trump into introducing some form of AI to perform assessments for Doge. I think that is a very real possibility.
Are you for that?
It depends on how transparent they can be. If it's provable that it is a transparent technology that is kind of just analyzing data, and it is, it's open source, and it's, and people that have an understanding of how the code works and how the algorithms work. I think as long as they can remain transparent, then, hey, why not let Grok or somebody take a look at the waste, fraud, and abuse out there? It would be able to move extremely fast. You know, you think they're finding things now. If you were to have Grok analyze some of the patterns and some of the financial transactions, it would take it no time at all to find the abnormalities throughout the entire government. It'd be very, very quick. It's just a matter of, do you trust Elon, and do you trust AI?
Do you trust Elon?
It's a hard decision. So far, there hasn't been anything that I've seen that makes me not trust him, but I think it's trust but verify type deal with him.
Invoking Reagan's sentiment, trust but verify.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know who to trust anymore.
The richest, one of the richest, most powerful men in the world. It's kind of hard to imagine how that is the biggest champion for free speech out there without some ulterior motive in mind, especially when he's controlling things like Starlink and SpaceX and Tesla and X and you know, and he keeps on developing more and more at Neuralink, just, you know, how these systems are all going to be integrated into one global giant, it's going to be one giant technology company here.
I don't believe he's doing it on his own, man. How in the hell can he do that?
And the other thing about Elon is he is very, very heavily subsidized and funded by Saudi Arabia as well, when you really dig into it. So that's a whole different show. But yeah, when you get into where he got some of the money to purchase X, because even though he's the world's richest man, he doesn't have, $50 billion sitting in a bank account. It's all spread out through multiple businesses and entities. And there's a lot of things that he has to do to kind of reel in some of that wealth to make purchases like this. So he does have investors in platforms like X, I know. And I think I think Tucker Carlson just interviewed one of the largest investors in X, who is, he was educated in the United States, but he's a Saudi Arabian. And, from what I can see, seems like a decent person, but you don't know what anybody's intent is when they're that rich and that powerful. And they're just saying things in front of a camera. You just never know. So, I think only thing we can do is sit here and analyze what they're doing and make our own judgment calls and try to basically use our own intuition and our own judgment on what we decide to be true or untrue. I think at the end of the day, it's going to just rely, as it always has, on a group of free-minded Americans that want to stay free, and it's going to stay that way. It's going to stay that way for the foreseeable future. I don't think there's going to be any, I believe in what, Donald is trying to do with the, he's trying to, envision a world of, peace and prosperity. And, hopefully that's a realistic thing. But we just have to always be vigilant with what we're looking at here.
Amen. I know I promised to let you go at the top of the hour, and I intend to do that. I know that your voice is sounding raspy. You sound like you've had a full day, and I appreciate you coming on. Yep. Josh Mez, folks, you want to give your coordinates out on X? I know that you had an X profile that you're just now, you're just now restarting. You plan on keeping that or no? I'm just curious because I don't want to direct people to someplace that you're not going to.
I have a personal one that I use. I have another one out there. Bring the Receipts, it's called.
Bring the Receipts, yeah.
Yep. So you can look at me. You can look me up on X on that. It is a new account that I've started just as I'm doing more social media.
Yelled at by somebody for saying, you never allowed them to give a social media out. So I figured, okay, I'll do it this time. Somebody sent me an email, kind of peeved about it. So bring the receipts.
Show us receipts.
Show us receipts. Okay.
Yep. Show us receipts on X.
Show us receipts on X if you want to follow Josh Mez. He's going to be coming back on after he regains his voice, drinks a half a gallon of honey, maybe, and some hot toddy. Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you spending some time with us. And God bless,
always,
my friend.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll be talking with you tomorrow, I'm sure. And folks, we talk every day. And I'm telling you what, the information he knows is just staggering. So, all right. Thank you, my friend. Talk to you. Yep. All right. Wow. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on here. The second hour, by the way, Stan Dale is going to be joining us, or at least that's the schedule. I didn't talk with him recently, and that's because, man, I've just been, like, zoomed out. Hopefully he will be joining us. I do believe that to be the case tonight. Meanwhile, I just want to mention this as well. Folks, did you see this? What the hell's wrong with people? I say that more and friggin' more often. What is wrong with people? I look at my dog. Okay. God bless my dog, Lady, the studio dog. I love her to death, and because, you know, she gets me, and she doesn't like people either. Okay. And, but anyway, there is this absolutely nutbag Biden judge saying that, you know what, I just might rule that President Trump's executive order on transgender troops, tranny troops, not transmissions for a 57 Bel Air, but, you know, tranny troops, says that the fact that there's only two sexes or two genders, that's not biologically correct. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Today, a federal judge signaled that she would side with a group of trannies, soldiers, to block President Trump's EO on transgender troops. Judge Anna Reyes, a Biden appointee, held a hearing today about that. Now, I just, again, what in the hell's wrong with people? I just have to ask that question. That's rhetorical, though. All right. On the brighter side of things. That's right, brighter side. With me now is Stan Dale, standale.com. You know, he's the author of Cosmic Conspiracy. His wife, Holly, is the author of Dare to Prepare. He's the man behind the creation of the EMP Shield, which is a fantastic product. If you haven't gotten yours, you might want to. And he's here. And it's great. Stan, come on board. How you doing? Are you there? Stan the man. There we go.
Yeah, sorry,
the
I turned off my mic because I didn't want to interrupt. Sorry.
No. The man, the myth, and the legend, Stan Dale. It's good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too. Boy, we've had an interesting few weeks this year since January the 20th. Wow.
You think?
Well, I was just upstairs watching the interview between Musk and Trump and what's his name, Hannity. Wow. Interesting stuff. Interesting.
Yeah, when we go up against that, I got to tell you, we're, now we can't go up against anything like that because more people are tuned into that. So can you give us what's going on with that interview? Do we know?
Well, obviously they're trying to, explain why Trump has given so much power to Musk, but he emphasized the point Trump did, that Musk is an advisor. He has hired him to be an advisor for $0 or whatever. And, Musk is a very intelligent man. We know that. And he's slightly on the autistic side. So he communicates sometimes a bit, awkwardly to people. But if you look at him in his eyes behind those, there's a brain working like overtime at 180 IQ or whatever. I just tried his Grok 2 program. He's released Grok 3 as well, which is an artificial intelligence. And let's see here. I can't see who I'm looking at here. Okay.
Grok 3.
Okay.
We were talking about that. Josh Mez was on with me first hour. We were talking about Grok 3 or Grok, the new Grok for. Yeah. Talk to me about this. What? Huh?
Well,
I mean, wow.
It's an app that's written to give a technically artificial intelligence to the computer that it's running on. Now, Grok 3 has now boosted what Grok 2 could do. It can also process images, which Grok 2 could not. Musk has set up a factory over in Tennessee, and it's amazing. this factory, this server farm, is codenamed or really named Colossus. And I've talked in your program before about that movie back in the 70s, I think it was called Colossus, the Forbin Project, where they had an AI computer then, and like an IBM thing, and how it was so all invasive that it could protect itself if you tried to blow it up at its server farm or wherever it was. It could divest itself from that and go out and hide itself into satellites and other memory banks around the planet, you know, where it could reach through telephone lines and things like that. Now, what Musk's team have done with Grok 2 and 3 is they've given it an attitude, a sense of humor based on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, or, you know, to the galaxy, that's what it was. And so he's programmed it with things that Musk has, with things that pleased him. A science fiction work, I think it was by Heinlein or something, was where he got the term Grok. I can't exactly remember whether it was Heinlein or not, but it was a sci-fi writer who wrote about a Martian who developed a word for an all-encompassing knowledge, was Grok. Mez, is that about right? Do you remember that?
Oh, he's still with us. Good.
Do you remember that, Mez?
On Grok, as we speak, I was looking into some of the things that so I wasn't really listening. I'm sorry.
Okay. What did what was the sci-fi work? Was it by Heinlein that Musk used to determine use the word Grok, that Martian?
I'm not sure where he likes tapping into the, you know, even with his kids' names, he likes tapping into that whole sci-fi genre of things. I'm not sure what specifically that's from.
Okay. OpenAI. I'm just looking at Colossus here. Okay. Well, anyway, obviously he's a sci-fi fan, like most of us that are techies. I just got onto Grok 2. I couldn't get onto Grok 3 at the moment. Are you on Grok 3 at the moment?
Yeah.
Okay. Type in this question.
Sure.
Stan, space, Deo, antigravity, and see what it tells.
All right. Hold on one second.
All right. Deyo, Stan, Deo, yep. Antigravity.
Yep. Oh, I'm going to get back into it.
You know, this ought to be fun. But plus, it's got an attitude. Like, we really need a frigging computer with an attitude. Okay.
Right. That's the humor.
Let's see, Grok. Okay.
Here we go. We're posing the question.
Anti-gravity.
When Musk called it the Colossus project over there, he's opened the door to a lot of criticism from biblical scholars about the beast in Revelation 13. It's going to be interesting to see how the public reacts to that. But what does it say?
Well, okay. It is giving a very, very detailed description. Stan Deo's work on anti-gravity centers around his claims of advanced propulsion systems that defy conventional physics, particularly the idea that gravity can be manipulated or negated using electromagnetic or electrogravitic principles. Deo is a self-described inventor and researcher, has spent decades promoting these ideas, often blending them with speculation about suppressed technologies, UFOs, and government cover-ups. Then it goes into key concepts in Deo's anti-gravity claims. Citing there's a whole paragraph here about electromagnetic manipulation, toroidal coils and vortex physics, inspiration from Tesla and others, UFO connections, and then it goes into what you've shared publicly, a skeptical viewpoint, and why it persists. Generated that entire report within seconds of me typing.
Amazing. Oh, well, yes. Okay, it's got my number, so it would appear.
Oh, it sure does, yep.
Oh, well, all right.
Is that a good thing? I mean, is that a good thing? Forgive the stupid nature, the basic nature of that question, but I don't know if I want I don't know. I don't know. Go ahead. Continue. Yeah.
Well, I mentioned that thing in Revelation 13 in relation to this supercomputer. I've been kind of trying to reassess, you know, my opinion or direction of research on who the Antichrist and the false prophet are spoken of in Revelation 13. Now, it refers to a beast set up. And at the moment, I am thinking that perhaps instead of a guy, we're looking at an artificial intelligence. Now, according to what Musk says, his new AI system over in Tennessee, the Colossus Project, is the best or the fastest AI in the world. Now, that's a claim. I don't know how you prove that, but I know that we're going to need something like that to handle the global economy and global politics. So one guy that I watched his video, it's a pastor of some description here. I hadn't been to his site before, but he, let me just see if I can find that. I'll tell you what he said here. It was rather interesting. His name is, he's a pastor, Steve Ciocolanti. And can I share images here, I think? Yes, I can. All right, let me just get this thing up here and show you his website, because he's taken a different view than I've got on the four horsemen of the apocalypse, you know, the different colors being the colors of the Shia religion in the Middle East. But let me just get it into the program here. Okay, come on, let me have it now. There we go. Okay, now where do I share this good piece of information here? Okay, and okay, Zoom. All right, can you see that now then?
Yes.
Okay.
I think,
this is the pastor here. And he was interviewing Mark Biltz, another pastor, both researchers into the prophecies of the, of all the biblical prophecies concerning the Antichrist in this time. Now, using his formula and the numbers he uses, it's been very accurate in what he's forecast and tied to prophecy in the past. But going on the basis of what he's got here now, he's going to say that the tribulation period doesn't start until 2030 or 2035, somewhere in that range. You can see this is what he covers in the in the video, and I'll get that video link to you later. I think I've got here. Let's see here. Let me just go here. Okay, I'm having to pass the security thing here to get into it. Oh, come on.
So looking at the time pattern, pretty much the same stuff, different year. Yeah, I mean.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to. A major war is predicted by this guy in Trump doing it in June of this year. Okay, now I've got
President Trump initiating a war this in June this year.
Well, it's sort of like that, yeah. That he'll be involved in this, and a war will start in June. I'm just trying to figure out: do we have a chat thing here somewhere here?
We do.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Chat to everyone. Here is this video link. To go watch yourself. It's involved and time consuming. But this guy is saying that he's putting the tribulation period out, as I say, toward 2030, 2035, depending on how you interpret what he said. Now, that would mean it's a long way out. But these things that are happening now, that we have war that's on the brink of it in the Middle East, and There are various things with the economy that are going to require a global economy to be set up immediately, a global economic system that's digital. These aren't going to wait 10 years to happen. What I'm trying to say is that even though his formula, looking at these interpretations of numbers in the Bible to interpret what is happening now and what will be happening, I don't think I agree with the timeline. And that's just me, because it doesn't feel right with the other things happening with the UFO disclosure on our doorstep, with the AI coming to power here within the next 4 years or less. So I do think that, even though I disagree with this last part of it, it's worth looking at his whole interview, because it brings up some very interesting coincidences, I guess, but perhaps planned events that occurred in the Bible, word spacing, word values, gematria, lots of things that I've heard about before, except he's got a different spin on it, which I think is worth reviewing. Anyway, I've just put that link into the chat thing there. Can you see that, Eric?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, good.
Well, yes, yes.
Okay, let me just see what I've got here. We've got that. Okay, June, Trump. Okay. Okay, I'll put this, I snapped the screen. I'll put this about the June thing with Trump on the Photoshop here. And we'll share that. Okay, this is just a screen snap of that video. It's got a lot of things, and I was using a script interpreter here. Prophetically, this year with Trump in office this June is going to be mind-blowing, is what it said after that. So it's a war event in June. It goes on to say that, and you can see here in the bottom where I screen snap, this is at timeline 9:29 out of 35:13. So you can see there where I saw this, and go and click on the interview and go to that address and have a listen to it when you've got time. Anyway, sorry to bother you with all that. It's just the way it is.
Okay. Interesting. Well,
yeah. Okay, let me just delete some of these things here that are on computers. Did I tell you that he's based his humor routine on the humor of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Yeah, I did. Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
old age, you know how it is.
I do.
All right. Now, on some local things with the sun. The we've had the hottest year in recorded history this year, in late 24 as well. This is commensurate with what I'm talking about as far as the sun.
Wait a second. That explains the 4 feet of snow I've got on my door. So well, it hasn't melted since November.
Well, it will. It will. It depends what part of the planet you're on at the moment. But they're looking at the sun as a total effort rather than, you know, the temperature in America or Africa or whatever. It's a combined temperature. Normally they say if the average temperature of the planet varies by 2 degrees centigrade up or down, it'll make a major change in the climate. 2 degrees centigrade down, cold age, you know, ice age. 2 degrees up, hot, you know, unpleasant weather. And that's where we are now. We're at 2.1 to 2.2, I think, over the average in temperature of the whole planet averaging out. Let me just see here. What XMP, what does that do? Okay. Just trying to get that article, some of the details of it here, into the program, into...
Last time I asked... what a button did, Eric slapped me. So be careful, Stan. I'm not sure what buttons you're pushing, but be careful.
I know it's a bit of a problem. Okay, let's share this. I think we can just do it in a browser here. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, surface air temperature in January 2025, based on a... 29-year average, and you can see that the heat wave, believe it or not, is up through Alaska, Canada, and over into the Russian grain fields and whatever, into Siberia. Now, you're down here in the United States, obviously, and right now it's cold, what it will shift. You know, the red here is showing in hot spots, it's showing a temperature change of 5 to 7 degrees C up. And, you know, 2 degrees up as an average is a danger. So when you average out all these temperatures, we're somewhere around 2.3, I think it is, C, expecting a heat wave as a result. And this is a plot of all the global surface air temperature anomalies, you know, over the average. And you can see up here where we are, we're way above all of the average ones since 1950. This reinforces my thing about the sun being hotter, and it's going to throw off, I'm pretty sure, a shell off the surface. Okay. This is the Solar Dynamics Laboratory at the moment. Let me just throw this up here. Can you see that gray sun with the green and stuff, yellow?
Yep.
Okay. The sun is, the surface of the sun is really getting thinner, has been for some time. And we know that since 1958, the Russians had published papers on the fact that we had burned up, you know, the sun had consumed half of its hydrogen supply, which is the basis for the nuclear fission reactions that occur on the sun. Now, these sunspot regions here, which are the yellow, blue, green obtained, they are a result of turbulent vortices, you know, springing up out of the core through the mantle here, or the photosphere. And these magnetic fields can throw out flares and coronal mass ejections from the voids that form between them. And in the northern hemisphere of the sun at the moment, because it's in the progress of shifting, the north and south pole of the sun are reversing, and they're not doing it cleanly this time. They're sporadic and all, you know, erratic too. I'll show you that here in just a second. In the northern hemisphere, you know, as we look at the sun direct on, the sunspots have a polarity, let's say blue. Let's call that north, right? They're supposed to be all the same thing. Blue leads orange, red. Blue leads orange, red. Uh-oh, over here, we have red preceding blue. That means that that sunspot group going around there has what they call a delta gamma magnetic field formation, which can produce super, X-class flares. Down in the southern hemisphere, red leads blue. Red leads blue. And red over here hasn't got a strong blue at all. So we're watching these things to see what's happening. Down here is the one we worry about. These are pointed directly at Earth when they occur here. And in the next week, we're probably going to see this area over here develop into a complex field. Now, this is looking at the sun today in the magnetic fields of the sun. You can see here that the southern hemisphere magnetic fields here. But what we were looking at over here, where we had this reversed polarity, you know, conflict here, that delta gamma formation, here we can't even see much from it over here. But these we can see, and the white and the black are polarities again. So down here we have white leading black, but, you know, black kind of leading white. This is spiraled. It's spun around a bit. And we can, let's look at it from the Earth. This is what we see from the Earth right now. There's that little one up there in the northern hemisphere. But the green lines are one pole of the sun, and the purple, or another, doesn't matter if we call it north or south, because every 11.5 years they switch. But they don't switch instantly. One will switch a year or so before the other one. And so sometimes we have two magnetic norths of the sun or two magnetic souths of the sun. And up here, at the top of the sun, as we face it physically, this should have either green or purple, all of it, right, coming out of here. But it's not. Green is kind of hunkering down over here on a semi-equatorial axis there. And if we look at the South Pole, it should be the opposite of that. Well, it's kind of creeping over that way. You can see that it's part of that sunspot group there. So this is showing you that the things are unstable. I'm going to add some more lines in here. There we go. And this is what we're looking at now. And so for about the next 7 days, things will start to quieten down after this group passes. Let me just pass it around that way a little bit. That's 90 degrees. That's about 180. But what's coming on the backside is going to be rather interesting. These sunspot regions that have magnetic field lines that go across the equator and then down toward the southern pole and around the other side of it, they are pulling the surface of the sun together. It's like a magnet. It's trying to scrunch everything down toward the sunspot region, increasing the turbulent actions. So this is today. And for this area here makes a rotation every 28 days at the equator and every 32 days at the pole because it's a fluid type structure. So it does it irregularly. Let's see if we can get a better picture of that here.
So you're saying the sun's angry. is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's today's sun. And notice these kind of bright areas here are like almost parallel to the equator, but not really. When I say that, let's get over here. Maybe this one here will tell us a little bit more. You can see that they've been forming a wedge, okay, and it's starting to collapse. Now, with this wedge, it's like a wake. Something at the equator of the sun is moving, you know, in this direction, as it normally does, but it's leaving a wake, like a boat wake, in the fluid plasma of the sun. And it's, you know, normally these are balanced, about the same number of fields here as there are up here, but it's now going walk patrol. You know, it's not matching. Oh, actually, you can't see what I'm seeing here. Sorry. We put that here. Yeah, sorry. Tell me when I'm waffling and you can't see what I'm talking about. Sorry about that. See here, this green lines here, which are kind of neutral magnetic fields. See that they form this arrow going that way. And that's why, you know, I've been looking at this. It's been getting more intense as time passes. And, of course, this is what we're looking at here. And this area that's now facing us is rather interesting. It's potentially dangerous as well. Because of the conflict, you know, of the black-white, and white-black proximity here. This makes a delta-gamma thing here as well. Anyway,
to summon AOC's brilliance, we can always send up a probe to the sun, you know, land it on the sun, but only when it's dark out, and check things out a little bit closer. Okay. Look at that.
All right. Yeah. That's not going to help us more there. Okay. All right. Let me stop that share. Okay. These things are important to watch. And I've been warning about this going to be a very hot, unstable solar cycle 25. And it's proving to be that. Now, in the Bible, in Revelation, they talk about, and in a couple places in the Old Testament, they talk about the sun having a cloud appear around its surface. And that's what I think will happen when it starts to eject a lot of material from the sun in kind of like a nova, a small nova, not a supernova. And it's going to be like what I showed you in the Monoceros cluster from the European Space Agency. Over a 9-month period, that star in the Monoceros cluster threw off a shell. Bang, it went out through the solar system there like that over a 9-month period and going through all of its planets that were there. Now, the Bible says that there's going to be a time during the tribulation period when the sun will, a cloud will rise on the surface of it, and the light of the stars will be diminished by a third or more. The light from the moon reflecting the sun will be blood red. It's telling you that when it ejects this cloud of material from the sun, it's going to change something in the nuclear chemistry. They're probably going to what's called a fusion reaction. Instead of hydrogen, we're looking at helium. Helium-helium fusion reaction, which will change the light coming from the sun. Now, I don't know whether it's going to be toward the blue, white-blue spectrum or the more red, toward a red giant, but not really being a red giant. As you can see outside, compared to Doug, when you and I were young fellows, the sun was yellow. you know, sunshine was yellow, but now we're seeing it more whitish blue.
Yep. Yep.
And so this may be part of the new chemistry coming from the sun, that it'll be a very blue, white, bright sun when it finishes throwing off this cloud of dust. Anyway, that's
interesting.
Well, it is. It is. Another thing, too, about biblical prophecy, people have been looking for this 666 thing, and I've talked about this before several times, but I want to restate it here. If you look at Revelation 13, it says here, the number of the beast, the number of man, here is wisdom, 666. Okay. In the Bible, there are passages that answer the coded message. I mean, the answer to the puzzle in Revelation is found elsewhere in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament. Now, King Solomon was known for his wisdom. He was known for the fact that he took in a tithe from other countries of 666 talents of gold, which was a lot. And so we have a point to a man named Solomon, who was known by 666, who was known for his wisdom, very clever fellow. And if you look at what the Antichrist of this age is going to be, he's going to be a rich man. He's going to have a name, I'm pretty sure, that is related to Solomon. In Hebrew, when you think that they named him Solomon in Hebrew, they didn't. They named him Shlomo. The Arabs named their super guy, which was the third. Anyway, it's Shalmaneser the third, which was Solomon in English. And their use of the name of their superhero, people think it was King Solomon of the Bible, but it was not. It was Shalmaneser. And he exhibited many of the things that the mystics of that age in Europe or in Asia called King Solomon, who could talk to the animals and, you know, he talked to jinn and use magic. And he could produce fire ahead of his armies to destroy anybody his armies are attacking, much like the Ark of the Covenant tale going before the house of Israel. So the name Shlomo doesn't sound like Solomon, but we have it interpreted that way in the Greek. Looking at that, we know that the Antichrist of this age is somehow going to be wealthy. He's somehow going to be very smart, wise, and he's going to bring about a peace treaty between Israel and the many nations, about 40 of them surrounding Israel. These things, if you look at Donald Trump, at Jared Kushner, at Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, these things can all be produced by one or all of these guys. Now, you know, that's a terrible thing to say, but I mean, Trump did have a head wound to the ear. He did recover. And he's now working on a peace treaty in the Middle East with Jared Kushner, his son-in-law. Trump is not a prince. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, he is not technically, but the newspapers call him the prince, you know, of the negotiations. And they called him and Mohammed bin Salman the princelings, the two princes together in the Middle East, forming a peace treaty and bringing peace to the Middle East. Now, prophecy can be linear. It can be this part here and then jump back to another part here. It's a puzzle that requires wisdom to decipher what it really means. And I think it is written, you know, most of the prophecy, so that when it is occurring, you'll be able to see a little bit ahead of what is actually happening because you know the prophecy is going in that direction. There's no one on the earth at the moment other than, you know, like Elon Musk is smart, but President Trump is streetwise and wealthy, but he knows how to the art of the deal. So he is definitely going to make a peace treaty in the Middle East where Kushner's already said that he and Mohammed bin Salman are going to take over Gaza Strip. They're going to clean it, level it, put in billions of dollars to build it up. And then they're going to, while they're doing it, they're going to move, whatever it is, 1.8, 2 million Palestinians to somewhere else while they're doing it. And they were going to set up a government where the civilian government can elect its new leaders and whatever, but the civilian government will have a committee from the Arab nations and the United States and whatever, a committee that will watch every election and every appointee to government so that no terrorists may hold an office in the new Gaza Strip or the new Palestine. Now, The Gaza Strip is only part of the Palestinians. The other part is in the West Bank, you know, the West Bank of the Jordan. And so there's a bit of land separating the West Bank from Gaza Strip. But these things are rapidly forming. So what Garrett Kushner has done is he's a brilliant guy with, you know, Excel and spreadsheets making business plans. And he's been going around to a number of these 40 Arab nations that are around Israel and offering them a business plan where they will profit from what he proposes, whether it's laws they change or trade agreements they change. Each country has a different business plan. And that's the carrot that he's given these people. And Mohammed bin Salman is right there with him. And Qatar is overseeing this process in the background. We're going to see massive changes between now and the end of the year. In fact, even probably before June, if we believe what the guy was saying in that video. Do you follow kind of what I'm saying, Doug? I mean,
I think so. I know I'm jumping around. No, I mean, so what you're saying right now is, and correct me if I'm wrong, we've got some contenders for the Antichrist, right?
You know, I do that. I mean, I haven't put Trump up in there because there's just a number of things that don't fit him, but there are also a number of things that do fit Mohammed bin Salman. Let's see here. What program is that? Okay, let me just go over and show you the potential guys that I've got here. Where are we looking here? Okay, down to number 13. Okay, 13, right. All right, let me share this with you and show you. I'm an equal opportunity accuser. You know, all these different possibilities. I mean, I'm not hung up on one. But looking at the different clues to the identity of this Antichrist and of the beast, this super-duper thing that's going to control the whole world economy, all these things fall into place. Now, what you're seeing here is my show images page, which I get to by going to the Deo site, which is standeo.com, and the books and things we produced, all that kind of stuff. But up here at the top right under YouTube, it says Show Images. And if you go there, that's to my updates there, and go down to slide 13, which is Who is the Antichrist? The Assyrian Solomon of our time. And then I say underneath that in 2 Samuel, and David comforted Bathsheba, his wife, and went in unto her and lay with her, and she bare a son, and he called his name Solomon, and the Lord loved him. But the prophets wanted to call him Jedidiah, so they overrode the prophets and named him Solomon, or Shlomo, really, in the Hebrew. Now, let's click on this picture here. Who is the Antichrist? Now, what I've done is I've put up Mohammed bin Salman, the minister of Turkey, Süleyman Soylu, Jared Kushner. His name doesn't sound like Solomon. Pope Francis, who is now ill in the hospital and may not live long enough to be an Antichrist. Bashar Assad, who is now in Russia, but I think he will be coming back in the Middle East into power with Putin's backing. The president of Turkey, Tayyip Erdogan. You know, he's possible. And then I put up, surprisingly, General Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian general who was killed. Now, bringing that back to the prophecy that the Antichrist would receive a head wound and it would rise up and everyone would be amazed by him. And putting that together with artificial intelligence, which can generate real-time video of a person that's not even alive by using actors and throwing the face of Qasem Soleimani in the body over this actor. And the pattern would be the same that they have captured from news releases. So this AI could produce an image of General Qasem Soleimani of Iran alive and well, and the people would marvel after it. That's a possibility. Now, I put Obama in there because of various things you can see in the squares beneath. I say why I consider them. And my passion for looking at UFOs and fallen angels as, pretending to be Jesus crowd coming back and peaceful people to earth. And Pope Francis' biography, when he's welcoming even aliens, that raises a red flag to me. Even though you know, he may not be the Antichrist, but it may be the false prophet. I'm throwing all these things out as I find them, I update them, trying to give people a playbook of possibly what plays are going to be made and who's going to make them into what's coming. I don't think I'll get any argument from your listeners about, you know, the fact that we're going to need a world government immediately. We're going to need a stabilized economy. With Trump throwing the cat amongst the pigeons with these reciprocal tariffs and things to all the countries we trade with, it's going to create, it is creating a chaos in the economic situation of the planet. So much so that we may see one of or more of the agencies or countries that he's put this tariff on, you know, declare war against the United States. Watch for it, and daily things are going to be happening. So, you know, I don't know whether you agree with that or not, but I just think that we're pregnant with things about to happen on the planet.
Well, it's a discussion. I mean, that's really, that's what it is. I don't think there's anything to disagree with. These are all possibilities or perhaps maybes. Okay. Let's look at everything.
Did you know that we have about 100 volcanoes down underneath Antarctica that many of them are ready to erupt and throw up magma, melt some of the ice cap? About 100 volcanoes they've mapped down there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, things are going to warm up. The ice... they're blaming it on global warming or whatever, but it is melting, and we're seeing a change in the temperature going up in the Arctic Ocean as well. You know, years ago I talked about a model for the planet Earth, a gravitational model, where we had shells of gravity reversing, going down toward the core of the planet and reversing each layer. When you look at gravity as a vortex spinning around like this, moves heat up toward the polar regions, north and south, periodically as these vortices tighten up and then release their spin rate. I've noticed that we're seeing a potential for a quote-unquote thermal hole to open up at the North Pole, and possibly that's what's happening at the South Pole at the moment. I'm not saying that everything is hollow inside so that you can live whatever, like the alleged diary, you know, what's his name, that went over the pole. But we are seeing polar thinning. And I've noticed the same thing on Saturn and on Neptune. If you look at the photographs there, you're going to see temperature changes on the polar regions as the polar regions expand a bit, like they're opening up. Really fascinating stuff. I mean, Byrd's trip, if it did happen in his diary, he went down through a hole at the pole and flew into a city and all that kind of stuff. Now, whether it was the South Pole or the North Pole is arguable, but there are things happening all at once that are going to absolutely blow the mind of the people that don't know any of this background. So that's why I keep repeating things and bring them together in this discussion. I've talked about portions of this in other discussions all over the place, but you bring them all together. These are the things you've got to watch for. Rapid change, full disclosure, quote unquote, full disclosure of the UFO presence and what its aim is. And they may back President Trump. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles this disclosure business. But the leader of the world will be backed by them at the time that these fallen angels take over as our elder brothers from space. I know this sounds wacky. That's okay. Wacky stands ideas, but there's a lot of evidence pointing to this and things I've been involved in directly, which are not a matter of public record, as you can see when you check your AI over there, Grok 3. you know, it's things that I can't prove. I don't have the documents to prove it any longer. But anyway.
But you're teasing us now, in a sense. So you can't, although you can't say certain things, I mean, what do you see happening with this disclosure, exposure kind of thing? You see some things coming out and saying, hey, you know what? surprise. I mean, what do you see taking place?
Well, you can see with this whole remake of the United States by Trump and his administration that secrets are going to be revealed that were hidden. Okay, who shot President Kennedy? Whether that's a true thing that they're releasing or not, you don't know. But it, in that spirit of things, the UFO question is going to be addressed, I'm sure. And we're seeing more and more public reports of larger and numerous numbers of UFOs, flying lights in the sky, and planes nearly crashing into them, all kinds of stuff. As this intensifies, and I think it will be during President Trump's reign here, or his term. Freudian slip there, I guess.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, you can see where my mind is going in the background. But anyway, that these elder brothers in space that are going to be revealed, revealing themselves to mankind, are going to come at a time when the Earth appears to be at extinction-level events like a global nuclear war. And this will be because someone, I think, will detonate a nuke over Damascus that will destroy the Iranian placed storages for missiles that could carry nuclear warheads into Israel. Now, when a nuclear device is detonated over there, whether America does it or Israel does it, it's still Satan and little Satan, big Satan, whatever, the world will suddenly be ready to have a multifaceted nuclear war. And at that point in time, I think it will be urgent, and the people of Earth will say, forget the governments, elder brothers in space, can you help us? You know, can you change the weather? Can you protect our countries from meteor impacts and solar disasters and whatever? At this point in time, the people of Earth will want to have a global government by our, quote, elder brothers in space, which will be fallen angels, in my opinion, bad guys. But part of what Matthew, in the book of Matthew, what Jesus is warning about as a great deception. And if you think about it, all this UFO business has been a growing deception about they're out there. It's a secret they're keeping from us. They may be friendly. And if they could take over the planet and clean up our governments, that'd be great. And for people that don't know better, Christian folk as well, if these elder brothers from space can come down and get rid of the Illuminati, you know, that everybody talks about, that would be the deep state here. People will cheer that and say, okay, deep state is all over the planet. And all these rich guys, they thought they were going to control the planet to make it a slavedom of some sort. They're gone. They're taken care of. And so whoever this Elder Brothers in Space group appoints, and we approve of course, as a world leader, will have the backing of technology that's so far advanced that, you know, to our own, that people will just marvel after it. And while I'm on that discussion, in 1958, the planners for what is coming, whether they're Illuminists or not, started censoring things in the Library of Congress, new papers and developments on electrogravitic and high-voltage physics. In 1958, the papers just died. There weren't any more submissions on that. They went over to magnetic or current-based technology, which exploded in all kinds of new inventions and papers. But everything on electrostatics and high voltage was condensed down to almost nothing. That's so that we wouldn't see that mankind can develop these technologies, which we were working on with Dr. Edward Teller's project. This needed to be done so that people will believe the deception that is coming, that the technology is something we couldn't have done and have to be, superpowers and parallel universes, whatever you want to call it. And people like myself, I'm sure that some of them that filed patent applications on this kind of technology are dead now due to natural causes or otherwise. In my case, I keep asking myself, why did they let me live and talk about it? But it must fit into the grand plan of things as far as I know. But believe me, we have had since 1951, I think is when it started, we have had access to anti-gravity and molecular technology that just makes things possible beyond belief. You go to the universities. I talked to one professor at the West Australian University in his room on a blackboard about anti-gravity. He says, you can't possibly lift a 30-ton object up over an airstrip and hold it there for 10 minutes. The amount of energy is astronomical. It can't be done. I said, well, gee, you mean if we had a hot air balloon that would hold 30,000 pounds and it was floating over the tarmac there that it couldn't do it? I said, of course it can. He said, well, that's specific gravity. That's not real gravity. I said, yeah, but it is forming a field in a balloon of lower energy, or sorry, higher energy density molecules, which lifts up a weight and holds it in place. That's like gravity. It's a fluid, you know, dynamic thing. He was so mad that he jumped up from his desk and threw a piece of chalk at me in the blackboard and splattered it over the room. You can't say that. So this is the kind of mentality that has been programmed into our educational facilities to make people think that anybody that thinks otherwise is a nutcase. You know, it's well disguised, but that's what they've been doing to prepare us as a race to say, wow, they're not from around here. We couldn't do something like that. There's no track record of anybody having that. And that's the whole plan.
Wow. Okay. Why 1958? Was there some, or was that just when it happened, when it began?
Well, that's when I noticed in the Library of Congress when they started censoring it. It could have happened before then. In fact, I think it did.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if there was a magic to that or some reason for that specific year, but that's when you, okay, got it.
Well, it was also International Geophysical Year, 1958. There might have been something connected to that.
Oh.
I know that the Teller Group, my security detail were telling me one time about how they got started in Saudi Arabia with that secret base that the Saudis let us have off the Jabal Tuwaik down in the southern part of the Riyadh province. We blackmailed a sheikh who'd had an affair that he didn't want his current wife to know about for some reason. And so we agreed to keep it quiet because we discovered it, if he let us have the secret base for us and the aliens, if you wish to call them that. And that the pieces of that base are still there, so that might have happened in 1952, somewhere back there. The amount of stuff that has been developed is just mind-boggling.
You know, I look at where we are today versus where we were in the 60s, you know, or even, I mean, heck, what, 25 years ago, I was still walking around with a handful of quarters looking for payphones, okay, you know?
yeah.
And now we carry around the computing power of, an incredible amount of computing power plus communications and, I'm amazed at the amount of progress we've made in the last, I don't know, you know, a couple of decades. It's just crazy.
I know.
I don't even know what to say, except
imagine that you do that again over our current technology thing when they unveil what they fell back from. Imagine what you're going to feel like then.
No. I mean, how did we get to horses and buggies to the Industrial Revolution, and then from the Industrial Revolution to where we are today in such a short period of time? Does that question even make sense?
One giant leap for mankind.
Yeah.
Well, that does make sense. I mean, it was an anomaly. It didn't seem to follow a normal progression like we did in the ages before. I mean, the Allies did meet after they defeated Germany, and Russia was included in the Allies, of course. And they realized that we couldn't have a nuclear war. We couldn't allow technology to just run away and kill us as a race. And so there were a number of plans made to try to limit public knowledge of technology. Go ahead and develop it, but privately, so that, you know, under the control of these bankers and whatever. And they knew that mankind just wasn't ready to suddenly jump in to an age where you've got, you know, cell phones and monitoring, you know, everything, and all your buying and selling is under control of a central authority. People weren't ready to just jump into that. So technology was leaked out, and you had games and internet play, you know, and all this kind of stuff to gradually bring the...
Who leaked that out, though? Okay, so you said, but who leaked it out? Who's in charge? Who was the gatekeeper or gatekeepers?
Good question. I mean, we've referred to them as the Illuminati in the past, but I think we're going to call them globalists. And these supersede national boundaries and national governments and laws. They're a planetary consortium. I mean, Teller's group was part of it. Dr. Andrei Sakharov over in Russia was a part of it. We had other scientists and physicists in other countries that were also a part of it, some Germans. In fact, some of the Germans were quite astounding in the stuff they developed. But anyway, we were supranational organization of research and development, not just in anti-gravity, but in all kinds of things, in medicine and tissue regrowth and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Energy, control of gravity, making local gravitic fields in a little spherical-shaped ball. You can put one of those in a car and have electric power for the rest of your life without ever having to refuel, because it converts gravity waves from wherever you are on the planet or in space into electricity to drive various, you know, electrical devices, including, you know, an electrogravitic propulsion system.
Wow.
There are so many problems with letting this technology loose just to the average person without oversight on a global basis, that people could use it, you know, terrorists could use it to destroy cities and cause problem. A guy could be drunk in his electric vehicle powered by a gravity wave converter and be flying over a neighborhood and push the wrong button and crash into homes using this thing that doesn't go on roads. It can go anywhere. This is why the flying car, you know, over in California that was being developed there and other places now in Europe, was not licensed for public use, because you definitely have to be a pilot and be under control of some air traffic controller to fly your car, you know, over a city or over homes, etc. And that's why the license to make the, you know, the flying car, what was his name over there in California? He still got a website there, big research. He had flying cars, looked like flying saucers.
George Jetson.
Oh, that's the guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, you know, to that, with respect to that, I remember the amphibious cars where you could actually, the car turned into a boat. Remember that during the Johnson administration? I think Johnson took a ride and it was during that time period. But they had to give that up because every time you went into the water, you came out, you had to re-grease the, I don't know, some part of the car, but anyway.
So,
that was big. That only lasted for like a short run of these vehicles, and then they said, "Nah, too much trouble." So
yeah. Anyway. I'm just trying to find the name of that guy. I dealt with him and his engineers over using some of their motors and devices we were looking at. What would you look for? Flying car research or something like that.
Flying car. Right.
Oh, anyway.
Ooh, wow.
Are we, what's our time like? Are we?
We are, we got about a minute, and a half.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I learned some of my, what I just shared with you about the government licensing because of this fellow. He told me about what problems they were having with the government. They could have had flying cars that they were selling and flying all over the country, except for the constraints of the government's regulations, you know. I do support some regulations on such things, because we are human and, you know, we can fail, whether we're drunk or have a heart attack or whatever. These things need to be controlled. Yeah.
Man, can you imagine, you know, a car accident instead of a second main? Yeah, it's the 42nd story of the whatever tower, you know, building, you know. Okay.
You fly into a business meeting or something, right through the side of it.
Man. So, okay. Wow. What a great conversation.
Mueller. Moller. He was his company. Yeah, sorry. Go on.
No, I'm just saying, we only have 30 seconds left. What a great conversation. Stan Dale from standale.com. Folks, make sure you join us Patreon, and you can get...